Hello, I'm Kyle.
I'm Ryan.
And I'm Jason, the creator of the Army Showcase. And it's time to take a look at the past year for Monsterpocalypse, what's come out, what's going to come out, and then it steps in the ring to go toe-to-toe with World of Warcraft miniatures for collectible miniatures game dominance.
So basically, it's Ruby Gem Sparkle versus the Power Rangers.
All that and more on this episode of the Tabletop Battlefield. Welcome back to Season 3 of the Tabletop Battlefield, the official podcast of the Army Showcase over at www.tabletopbattlefield.com, and it's episode 24, so we're getting just almost to the end of the season, and we got in the one episode we promised, which is going to be either Monsterpocalypse or Grind. We got more votes for Monsterpocalypse, I think it was 3-1, so we're going with Monsterpocalypse.
Three votes to one vote.
Yes.
Yes. Wow, well, actually our voting's increasing.
Yeah, it's better than last time.
Actually our voting's increased by what,
how
double?
Much percent?
Wasn't it 50%? Double because you didn't vote in this one, did you?
I voted in this one.
Oh, you did?
Oh, okay, there you go, 25%.
Well, yeah.
Whatever. Regardless, we'll end up doing Grind early next season, so I do want to play that game. So hopefully everyone had a happy Thanksgiving. By the time this comes out, it's been about a week, but hopefully it went well for you guys. For me, one funny little story, we actually went down to my aunt's house, who lives down in Ohio, literally in the middle of nowhere in a farm.
Now, that's a very funny story.
We're getting the funny story part.
Okay.
It's actually kind of a little bit of a sad story with a kind of funny ending to it. But basically, somebody dropped off these three cats at her church. So, she has a farm, she goes and kept them, you know, making little farm cats or whatever. But two of them are adorably cute. The third one would be adorably... The third one would be really adorably cute. It's basically a white cat with a few black splotches on it. The problem is its name is Mustache because it's got another little patch of black fur that looks like a mustache under its nose. The problem is this patch of black fur is a small rectangle, kind of like what Hitler has. So this poor cat would be adorably cute if it didn't have a Hitler mustache.
Do you have a picture of this?
I do have a picture of it.
All right.
It's on my pre.
We'll post it on the show.
It'll be this probably a show picture. I don't know, where's my Palm Pre at? I was sitting over there, I think. So,
okay.
Yeah, it's hilarious. It's this adorably cute cat, except that I feel like the face of Hitler. So.
Is that why you had the post on Facebook?
You said something about Hitler cat?
Yeah, you said something about Hitler.
It's probably always referring to the cat, the Hitler cat.
I believe you did.
Anyway, let's get to our main topic here about talk about Monsterpocalypse.
Which is why King Kondo does not actually fit on the Empire State Building.
Yes. That's an unfortunate scale issue. But anyway, what we're going to do here is we obviously reviewed this game over a year ago. We didn't really
give a good comparison to
anything. Yeah.
We never compared games.
This is the first time.
Yeah.
And so we kind of figure it gives a better idea of where things are located. I mean, you know, what we consider good, how it compares to another game we consider good, if you actually believe us or
and
not.
And it also goes to show how much you really know about these games. There's really not much of anything, at least for me and Kyle's sake.
Oh, now this is just making us look bad.
You just make us look bad, Ryan.
Yeah, this one...
Oh, I made me and Kyle look bad.
Yeah, not
me. Jason always knows what he's talking about.
Oh, no. Jason makes Jason look bad because he's the host and has us on every time.
But anyway, we haven't talked about this game in almost a year. We've rarely mentioned it, even though it's an awesome game. So that's what we thought we'd do here. Let's look back a couple of the three sets that have been released since the initial one, and kind of go over a little bit of what's been in each of them. And then, of course, we're going to match it up against World of Warcraft in a little bit here. So the first set they released was called I Chomp New York. This is the second set, but first expansion was I Chomp New York. It released a few new monsters, a few new units. But the coolest thing it did was release unique buildings. Of course, here's the Empire State Building.
Love it.
Which Ryan made the challenge, I want to slam Jason's butt through the Empire State Building. Have you done that yet?
No, but I did to Kyle.
He did to Kyle. Yeah,
but he never made that challenge to me, so it didn't matter. Otherwise, I would have avoided it.
But I think it's just kind of cool how they actually have landmark buildings. Of course, also the MetLife Building, which is called the Insurance Company Building, is sitting around here. Here it is. And there's a Statue of Liberty, and there's a fourth one, which I forget off the top of my head what it is.
Statue of Liberty would be kind of cool.
It would be fun. But they didn't actually keep doing that for some reason. It was just a one-set kind of thing. Maybe next expansion they'll do some other cities. Because they've actually, if you read the comic books, which I finally got a hold of, that was a pain to find those things, But they actually fight in Chicago and or in Seattle. So they may be interesting.
What? No buildings. Detroit?
No. Detroit's not doesn't have anything exciting. We have the Renaissance Center and that's about it.
So pretty much the whole land is already destroyed enough. They can't find enough buildings to throw people in. Other monsters throw people.
Okay, I won't say that joke. That joke was going over. I was about to say it's about to go downhill, so I'm not going to say that. But no one really cares about Detroit at all, I think.
No.
It's kind of sad truth of it.
I don't think even we care about Detroit.
Most people end up making fun of the city more often than not.
Even we do.
But anyway.
And I worked in there.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the third set, which was called All Your Base. Of course, the clever play in that old Super Nintendo game, I think it was. Like, poor Japanese translation, whatever. Mm-hmm. We've got the Morphers, where four small monsters became one big monster. Kyle's the only one to play that, because we only had the Cthulhu one. I didn't get in my cool Power Rangers.
It was actually really fun to play him.
Something different.
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting, because you got to worry about the guys being little units. They could take more damage. Mm-hmm. But yeah, something different. I don't know. It'd be fun to try, obviously, play more and see how things go.
I think it gives it a lot more tactics, actually, when you actually really learn how to play them.
Mm-hmm.
Because last time, you know, obviously these tentacles got destroyed by your guys, but it did some good damage before that.
Because if you get them clumped together, then you can really have problems. You can throw one monster onto them and do lots of damage that way, because they take damage individually, per se, but they have, like, a collective health pool. But the other big thing they did was bases. I'm virtually sitting off camera right now, but...
Would you like me to grab one?
Grab it.
Okay.
They released six new buildings.
Here you go.
Basically, one building for each of the factions is their home base. This one I'm holding up here is the guard that pulled all the boosters, but of course, Cthal's got one. Shadows and Syndicate has one. I wonder what the Martians one looks like. I don't know. They have basically different advantages, and they have weapons. So you get a home base. I mean, it's kind of cool.
It's got some special...
It's a little addition. It gives you...
But it's also, the downside is it often gives the enemy an excessive amount of power points if he's able to destroy it.
This one here gives him five, and if I destroy it, I get nothing, because it's my home base. I got supposed to try to protect it. Even the guard just has a tendency to run around and destroy stuff. Mm-hmm. We can't destroy this building. Anything else we can level, but not this one.
So that'll be the only building left standing after you play your game.
I think it was, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, when it's
after our game? Yeah.
I think it was the only building left standing, because there was no fighting over by it. So that was the third expansion. The fourth expansion, it kind of went back to how the first expansion was, but all new factions. So the six new factions, each one fits in with the agenda wheel. So basically they have their own faction and the new faction and pairs up with an old faction. The guard now fights somebody called him the Elemental Warriors or something like that. They're basically a group of Japanese, like, monks of some sort that channel cool magical energy.
Interesting.
You've got the Savage Swarm, which are giant insects.
Yeah, these are cool.
We'll talk about all the faction details in just a moment. Really? You've got the Kingdom of the Apes, who are just gigantic apes who are freaking sweet, too. They are radicals. They fight with the pterosaurs. You've got UberCorp International, who have built robot versions of monsters. They have robot versions of monsters, robot versions of units.
Robot Godzilla.
Yeah, there's like a Mechagodzilla-ish thing. There's also, I forgot the other monster, who is he a ripoff of? I think it's like, they have like mecha versions of like the Taskmaster of Cthulhu. I think it's Squiggits too. There's two other factions who are just totally blanking on it right now. That's pathetic. But there's six the mole, like the subterranean something. They're like...
Mole people?
They're not mole people, but they fight with giant moles.
Oh, there you go.
Their monsters are giant moles.
Nice.
And they basically burst out of the ground. Oh, the other ones are the... They're fish creatures that come from the oceans.
Oh, my goodness. So they work better in the water, then?
I don't know if they have special abilities to do that, but they're giant, like, fish and sea monsters.
Do you have any water maps? Is there even any water maps?
Yeah, some of the maps have, like, waters. There's also some new maps that came out, new map pack, and also the Privateer Press building, which is, it's basically a giant tower that says Privateer Press on it.
Do you get, like, 10 power points for destroying that building?
That'd be awesome.
Destroy it every time.
They give it, like, they give it, like, one PowerPoint for destroying it, and then their generic Games Workshop building has, like, 15 PowerPoints for destroying it. Yeah, so let's talk about the new guys. King Condor, he is really cool. I mean, just the artwork alone on him is beautiful. It's really a beautiful paint job. His name says King Kondo. He's a ripoff of King Kong. I think he's the leader of the Kingdom of the Apes, or one of the big leaders. So I'm not sure why he's in chains. I didn't
remember he's in chains because he got captured.
But I guess that's supposed to be like King Kong. Like King Kong, but I mean, I don't know if he actually ever got captured, but I don't know how the story behind
King Kong
works.
Did.
Yeah, King Kong did.
Yeah, so I'm sure they've fixed it some way to where he gets captured and he gets released.
Probably releases himself.
Yeah, releases himself.
Yeah. Screw you all, boo!
Literally, I don't think those type of chains are really going to hold him back.
No, probably not, especially when he goes hyper. He's got this really cool clear hyper form that's really cool looking. I like the fact he's got like scratches on him. So he's got these little bloody scars that look really, really good. You can see him, see him better on the
looks really nice.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow, that's nice. Looks like they've been whipped or something.
Yeah. And the other, like, fourth set, by the way, fourth set's called Monster Apocalypse Now, another kind of clever play on something, is this guy is, good luck trying to pronounce this, Mucustos, the giant beetles from the Savage Swarm, they're a bunch of giant insects. He's really cool, too. He reminds me of...
I don't know what he reminds me of.
The Godzilla monster, I think it's Gideon?
No clue.
He's in one of the aliens that invades in Godzilla on Monster Island. I think that's Gideon. Or something like that. No, not Gideon. No. It's King Ghidorah and somebody else. I don't know. But he looks kind of like that. But he's a gigantic bug. He's really cool, too. I think.
Yeah.
So, that's what we got for fourth edition. Fourth edition. Ugh. Fourth expansion. It's not the fourth edition. Yeah, so that's a quick overview of what the game's been up to. It still plays awesome. We play with some of the new units, some of the new buildings. I love it. It's still an excellent game. It hasn't changed a whole lot. Other than, I guess my thing I want to discuss quickly is, what do you think about adding new factions every year? Because I think their plan is basically to add 6 new factions every year.
Really?
That's going to grow a lot in a hurry. We've got 12 factions.
Yeah.
I think that's a little excessive.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends on how long they're going to be doing it. If they do it for a couple of years, then that's fine. You have a lot of factions to play with. You have variety to play with. But
also, it'll run thin.
If you do it, like, indefinitely, yeah, that's a little over-excessive, I think.
And also can run thin quickly on because people will get tired and bored. And there's only so many... I mean, yes, there's a lot of good, you know, making fun of monster movies and, you know, these type of things, but...
It seems that, like, collectible miniatures games, their goal is to crank as much crap out as they can. Granted, they're not cranking as much stuff out as, say, WizKids did with MechWarrior, where you had, like, 100 units 3 months later, then another 100 units 3 months later. It was way excessive. They're not nearly as bad as this.
And all these units are useful in one way or another.
Yeah.
Unlike, not, you know, Dark Age.
I think maybe it's partially what they're trying to do is keep down power creep. Because I think if you kept releasing the same 6 factions over and over again, you're eventually going to get monsters and units to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying they're going to have a set number for each faction, you think?
Yeah. You know, like because they release a base set, then they release 2 expansions for that faction, giving them a total of, like, 5 monsters and maybe 10 units. Because, you know, same with MechWarrior. If you kept getting more and more infantry and vehicles, eventually you got to the point where the new vehicle would replace the old vehicle, making the old one useless because it's more powerful at the same point cost.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in Monster Apocalypse, where you had no point cost to do any kind of balancing, you really could run into this power creep easily, where the new units are more powerful than the old ones, making the old ones totally obsolete. At least this way, by introducing new factions which fight differently or have different combination of powers, you might be able to minimize the effect of power creep if they do it well.
That makes more sense.
Maybe.
But then we're still getting back to, you know, it's a possibility of the game limitations that it could actually affect it.
Yeah.
If they don't expand it properly.
It's tough. We'll see what happens a year from now, see if they release more units or whatever they're going to do. But let's go ahead and actually put Monster Apocalypse up against World of Warcraft head-to-head. So we went and played both games a couple times. We're going to score them on a series of categories, but before we do that, let's take a quick overview of the two games. In front of me is Monster Apocalypse by Privateer Press, who also makes a miniatures game War Machine. Now, this is a collectible miniatures game which tries to capture the feel of giant monster movies, and it does that pretty well. Each player will control normally one monster, sometimes two monsters, and a host of little units. Of course, the battle takes place in a city where all the buildings are represented with 3D figures that are included with the game. The goal of the units is to race around the city and do one of 3 things. They're going to try to control areas, secure buildings, and engage the enemy units. Now, these 3 actions all basically give your monster what is called power dice. Power dice allow your monster to do more powerful, more destructive attacks. On occasion, the small units might gang up and do a group fire on the enemy monster and do a little bit of damage that way. But the reality is most of the damage to the enemy monster will come in the monster-to-monster fights. So the units are going around doing their thing. The giant monsters are walking around the city, doing the best to basically line up attacks against the enemy monster, leaving them in a spot that makes them relatively safe, in quotes. Because as you play the game, you'll see that there's certain places you want to stand and certain places you don't want to stand to minimize the risk to your monster. There's several different ways the monsters fight. They have ranged attacks, some of them do, all have some sort of close combat attack, and they all have what are called power attacks. Power attacks are the cool wrestling moves, things like body slams, throws, smashes, stomps, rampage, all these cool things you can imagine a giant monster doing. And this is the reason this does most of the damage to the opponent is because this is where the city comes in. The city itself is a weapon. In fact, you often want to use not only the buildings to power up the monster, but also by throwing your opponent into the buildings, it does additional damage to them. And to make things even worse, some of the buildings explode in a fireball, and others turn into radioactive waste, which then in turn does even more damage than just the initial impact of hitting the building. So you'll find there's a lot of strategy in terms of how you place your monsters to basically maximize the damage to the opponent while minimizing the risk to your own monster. There's also a huge amount of strategy in terms of team synergy. You want to pick units that work well with each other and work well with your monster. And you'll find the best way to do that is with faction pure armies. Now, it's not required in Monster Apocalypse to have faction pure armies, but you're going to get a huge advantage by doing so. So with that, that's a quick look at Monster Apocalypse by Privateer Press. Let's go ahead and now take a look at World of Warcraft Miniatures by Upper Deck. This is World of Warcraft Miniatures by Upper Deck. Now, this is the first time they ever made a tabletop miniature game. Of course, they're famous for a couple different things. One, their line of sports trading cards. The World of Warcraft collectible card game. And up until recently, they were the United States distributor for the Yu-Gi-Oh! Collectible card game. Now, this is a relatively simple, fast-playing game in what you call a warband scale. Now, the details of how you build your army vary from scenario to scenario, but under most cases, you'll have three figures in your army. Each figure has a corresponding stat card, which lists their things like health, their armor, and their basic attack options. And also, under normal rules, you get to choose what are called two additional action bar cards. Now, these cards add additional abilities and powers that the various character can use throughout the game. And each action bar card is usually tied to either a or certain race, or a certain class of characters, or for some of the really powerful super, what are called legendary characters, they're tied to that specific character. Now, one of the coolest features about World of Warcraft is that it gets rid of the whole I go, you go feature that is found in many tabletop war games. Instead, it has what's called a personal clock. Attached to the bottom of each figure is what's called a U-base, which in all honesty doesn't always work, but that's another story altogether. They have one stat on here which keeps track of when is the next time the figure can act. Because each round of the game is broken down into 10 ticks. On any given tick, anywhere from 0 to all the figures on the board may act depending on when they last act and what action they previously took. Because essentially, when you take an action with your figure, it's going to cost you so many ticks. So if, say if an attack costs 3 ticks, you would advance your clock by 3 ticks, and therefore this figure won't be able to act again for 3 more ticks later. The reason this is important is because more powerful attacks often take 3 or 4 ticks, while weaker, more simpler attacks take 1 or 2 ticks. So it's quite possible you could pull off maybe 2 or 3 weaker attacks in the time it takes for one character to pull off one large attack. So it kind of gives you a little bit of thinking about how you got to do things, because the main tactics for World of Warcraft miniatures come in with 1, what are my characters going to do, and when are they going to do them? The timing is very important, and choosing the right action to do the most damage is very important. You'll find there's not a lot of movement in the game, especially with only one objective point to capture, so the guys kind of pile around there, maybe shift a little bit, and just use different special powers until one side wins. So that's a quick overview of World of Warcraft Miniatures by Upper Deck. Now let's go ahead and dive into the competition and see which game is better. Alright, time for the face-off between Monster Apocalypse and World of Warcraft Miniatures. And here's how we're going to do this. We've got 12 different categories, 4 which kind of comply to the game attributes or how the game itself is kind of laid out or packaged. Then the other 8 ones apply to gameplay and things like that. Essentially, each category is worth a certain amount of points. The first 4 are all worth 5. The second set about gameplay and so on are either 7 or 9. And we basically split those points up between the two games. So say if the category is worth 5 points, one game can get 5 to 0, or it could be 4 to 1, or 3 to 2. And then we also
make sure nothing was even, then?
Make sure nothing was even, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So every game's got to be winning in every category. And then we're going to add up all the categories as we go along, and the overall winner will be who has the highest score at the end.
Dude, we forgot about imaginary numbers, though. Couldn't we use imaginary numbers in this?
Well, there's no square root of negative 1, so no. Unless you can find a way to get square root of negative 1 in this, no. So it's all real integers.
There's negative numbers here, though.
That's dash 7.
Oh, I thought that was a negative 7, so I guess I have to rechange all my scoring.
Yeah, unfortunately. Wait a minute, how'd you have a negative 15? Okay, now here we go. For real, let's get started here. So the first four categories are what we call game attributes. So the first one, the actual product line. Monsterpocalypse has random miniatures and a somewhat randomized starter set. World of Warcraft has random starter sets and faction pure boosters. This is worth 5 points. Kyle, what do you say? What's the scoring?
My score is 2 for Monsterpocalypse, 3 for World of Warcraft then.
So what for? Why do you say that?
I believe that at least knowing your faction is a little bit more important, even though they are both randomized. That was the closest thing I could come to saying 0 for both, because I'd rather necessarily know what I'm getting, preferably.
Yeah, that's always a certain advantage. For me, I'm looking 3-2 in favor of Monsterpocalypse. The reason is the faction PR boosters sound good in theory, but I don't like how they work out in reality. I hate buying a booster and getting 3 things and nothing, instead of just getting maybe 1 good thing and 2 crappy things. Ryan?
I got the same score. 3-2. Product lines, yeah, basically Monsterpocalypse is a lot better.
Okay. So with the first category complete, Monsterpocalypse has a slight lead, 8-7. Let's move on to figure quality, and I'll start this one off first. For me, I go 3-2 in favor of Monsterpocalypse again. They're very similar quality, but the stupid U bases on the World of Warcraft figures always fall off. That's why they got one less. Ryan?
Yeah, same here. 3-2. Quality of Monsterpocalypse just a little bit better than World of Warcraft. World of Warcraft is awesome figure. But yeah, those bases just really give it that negative point for me.
Kyle?
I had to agree with that. Mm-hmm. I believe that the buildings were what really made the difference in my book. I kind of thought that the bases on here can fall off even.
Yeah, we had one or two guys break,
but overall, that's better than the U bases on World of Warcraft.
Okay, so 17-13 for Monsterpocalypse so far. Non-figure component quality: the maps, the card, the dice, those kind of things. Ryan, go first.
Okay, non-figure. I actually gave this to World of Warcraft. 3 for World of Warcraft, 2 for Monsterpocalypse. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I did that is I just think that the board is nicer for World of Warcraft. The figures are a little bit designed not just the figures, but, I mean, what's underneath them, the board pieces, the dice are a lot better.
Although, I gave this wholeheartedly to World of Warcraft. Mm-hmm. I hate 1-4. The Monsterpocalypse maps I hate. Mm-hmm. They're designed only for 2 people. I mean, you gotta have better ways, than having crappy maps for 2 people that you can rip in half and no problem. The dice quality sucks on these small little crappy dice that get lost easily. Mm-hmm. Overall, you don't have to deal with that with the World of Warcraft.
Yeah, same here, 1-4 for World of Warcraft. Same reason you guys said. Paper maps versus cardboard maps, cardboard tokens, crappy dice for Monsterpocalypse. Which actually gives World of Warcraft a slight lead, 24-21 right now.
But I still love the radioactive waste.
Yes.
Are radioactive waste.
Going into the last game attribute category, the theme of the game, giant monsters versus fantasy. Kyle?
I gave it to giant monsters 3-2-2.
Yep.
I kind of figured that making fun of all the movie genres of throwing giant monsters into buildings and having monsters fight each other is a little bit slight edge on the...
Yes.
Fantasy, even though fantasy is still pretty cool.
For me, 4-1 in favor of Monsterpocalypse, because I love monster movies, I love Godzilla, and I love how this game makes fun of all of them, which is, of course, Monsterpocalypse. To me, I'm not a big World of Warcraft player. In fact, never played the computer game, so to me, it's just another fantasy game. It's a little different, but it's not a whole lot different from, say, Lord of the Rings or Warhammer Fantasy. So 4-1 for Monsterpocalypse. Ryan?
I gave it 4-1 for Monsterpocalypse as well. I mean, you just can't beat slamming other people into buildings and the building becoming on fire or radioactive or rubble or whatever. It's just the best feeling in the world.
So Monsterpocalypse strikes back, now taking the lead 32-28. Now you go into the gameplay stuff, which are all worth more points, either 7 points or 9 points per category. Smoothness of gameplay, how well the game flows, how many times you gotta check the rule book, that kind of stuff. I'll go first this time. For me, this is all World of Warcraft. This was 2-5 in favor of World of Warcraft miniatures. Mainly because there are so many special abilities in Monster Apocalypse, you're always looking that up, and you gotta know how those all interact if you really wanna have a good, strong force. I think World of Warcraft is a simpler game, and just smooth, it flows a little bit better because of simpler rules, simpler customization, things like that. Ryan?
Okay, I gave it for Monster Apocalypse, 4-3. This, I kind of was struggling on because of the fact that the last time I played World of Warcraft, which was with Jason, I kicked his pants. I had to say that.
You did. It was 22-2. It was embarrassing. Yeah.
And,
it was embarrassing.
And I really, but I don't remember, possible. I don't remember I learning World of Warcraft that quickly before I played it last time, and I remembered it being much smoother for me from Monster Apocalypse, like when I played it last year. This year, for some reason, it's just not as smooth for Monster Apocalypse for me, for learning, like relearning this thing. World of Warcraft's a lot smoother, so that's why it's a little, more, it was kind of hard for me to decide, but Monster Apocalypse, won. 1-4-3.
Okay,
well, I'm going to have to take Jason on this angle. There's too many rules and special abilities, which makes a unique game, but smoothness and time-wise, we spend 40 minutes and we barely got anywhere in this game, and it's going to take another hour before it decides a winner. That's a long time of investment, and unless you have memorized everything it's extremely difficult.
There's a much deeper learning curve than Monster Apocalypse. Once you know what
you're
doing...
You mean World of Warcraft?
No, it's in Monster Apocalypse. Steeper, yeah. It's a deeper learning curve. It's harder to learn.
Yeah, for Monster Apocalypse.
Yes, sorry.
You said...
No, you said Monster Apocalypse.
I said Monster Apocalypse. Said Monster I said Apocalypse. It right that time.
You said it right that time.
All right. Not me, it's you. But yeah, right. Same idea. Okay. Because of that, actually, World of Warcraft climbs just barely back on top, 41-40. And now it goes downhill for them. As we get to the rest
of the
Because
we already know the answers to these questions.
Not going
to
lie.
Well,
army build tactics. Basically, how you build your guys, how you build your force. Kyle, let's have you start this time.
I kind of thought that overall the World of Warcraft minis took a slight advantage, 4-3 on this one.
All right.
I felt that the different cards, even though there were, limited number, still gave it good customization. I kind of felt that the miniatures here, as much as there may be, a whole bunch of them, really limited in what they can actually do. I mean, yes, you can capture buildings, capture things, but there's only two things you're going to do, either capture or fire, and I kind of thought that for the number of miniatures required for this, it was the All actual right. build tactics were better for World of Warcraft.
Now I'm going to say actually direct opposite, say 5-2 for Monster Apocalypse. The reason I say that, while there is the customization with World of Warcraft with the action bar cards, I find in the gameplay I don't use the action bar cards a lot, so they're not as relevant. And Monster Apocalypse is all about team synergy. You want to build units that work well with your monster, that work well with each other, pick a city that works well with your units. It's all about building a super powerful force that is so cohesive and it works really well together. I like that a little bit more than just the little bit of customization that World of Warcraft gives you. There is some team synergy in World of Warcraft, but there isn't a lot of it.
Yeah, same grade. I mean, 5-2 for Monster Apocalypse. I mean, as long as you can get, the smaller units and the bigger unit complementing each other, you have a really good force that's effective in mutilating your opponent.
So that gives now, Monster Apocalypse is back on top, 53-49. We're going to move down to movement tactics.
Oh, boy.
I'll start this one. 7-0 for Monster Apocalypse. World of Warcraft just gets picked up and gets their back snapped in half. Why? Because in World of Warcraft, everybody moves 2 spaces 99% of the time. That's terrible. Monster Apocalypse is all about organizing your forces, all about moving your guys out different ways, capturing different buildings, putting them certain ways to capture multiple buildings, to influence each other. Lots of synergy. Guys power each other up. World of Warcraft, as I wrote down, becomes a party in the middle. You see, if you have essentially one VP game, everyone kind of basically becomes a cluster bleep in the middle there, and they just roll shooting at each other, maybe moving 1 or 2 steps, and not much movement goes on. It really comes down to how well you use your guys, not so much movement. Ryan.
I gave it for Monster Apocalypse, but 4-3. Okay. I mean, as far as World of Warcraft goes, I like the simpler nature of it. So simpler movement tactics, I mean, could be better. But, I mean, Monster Apocalypse obviously wins it because, you're right, there's more extravagant movement taxes. I mean, you can do so many things for it. It's unbelievable.
So Kyle,
I also gave
it... Ryan or Total Beatdown?
A Total Beatdown. I mean, moving two units, I think that was my first complaint.
Moving two spaces.
When you got these small, like, you know, small guys, or, you know, more less armored guys moving the same distance as the giant heavy armored guys, made no sense to me.
Yeah,
it limits the tactics, limits what you can do. I mean, everything is based on the, you know, on the turn counter, but. You know, that's only if you fire, you know, if you fire a weapon. What if you, you know, don't want to? You know, you still can only move two, and therefore it's really hindering of anything that you want to do.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so that gives now Monster Apocalypse a 71-52 lead.
Oh, boy.
Let's see what happens next. Combat system tactics. The tactics there are in firing your weapons, diversity of attacks, how, you know, anything deals with dealing damage to the opponents. Ryan, you're up first.
This is definitely Monster Apocalypse. I gave Monster Apocalypse 5-2. I mean, you do have a little bit in World of Warcraft, but Monster Apocalypse just, I mean, kicks it in the butt. Mm-hmm. It really does.
I gave it closer, 4-3, with the combat, the cards. I'll let you do a couple. Mm-hmm. I mean, even though there's still only two different types of, well, three different types of attacks, really. I kind of thought the ability to switch between magic and physical attack gave it up to a, you know, one more point closer. Otherwise, it would be 5-2 like Ryan.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with, actually, 5-2 Monster Apocalypse. The reason is there's the action bar cards in World of Warcraft, so you guys have a little bit of customization, but your monsters in Monster Apocalypse have, like, what, 7 different things they can do, 8 different things with all the power attacks. Mm-hmm. The little guys kind of are... You use them, obviously, grouping together, so there's some, definitely some advantages to keeping them close together to the formation attacks.
Until and, of course, you, the buildings. Trample them.
Until you trample them. Yes. That's part of the combat tactics. You can just level those little guys, and they get annoying. But the buildings. You throw people into buildings.
Yes.
And that you basically, how where you place the guys when you throw them can do lots of damage. What I call the Death Blossom, where you can potentially do 6 points of damage to somebody.
Oh, wow.
If you throw them in the right spot, the right building combinations.
Oh, my lord.
That's why I think there's better combat tactics in Monster Apocalypse.
So
total there, we're now up to 86-58 for Monster Apocalypse.
Oh, not looking good for World of Warcraft, not looking good. Yeah.
All right, game expandability. Essentially, how well can you do different scenarios? Play, you know, how well you can basically break away from the mold of one versus one play.
It's definitely World of Warcraft on this one. I gave it 2-5. I mean, we've been able to in Monster Apocalypse with some... You know, some thinking on figuring out how to get a third person here, but there's no way we can get any more than three people. And even that was kind of cumbersome. So I gave it definitely a good lead advantage to World of Warcraft, which I think allows for a lot more, you know, flexibility on what you want to do.
Yeah, same thing here. The Monster Apocalypse maps are really set up for one versus one. Granted, you could do one monster or two monster play, but... Compared to what you can do with World of Warcraft, especially since one side of the map in World of Warcraft is totally customizable with your own terrain tokens, and you can take multiple World of Warcraft maps and put them together. You just can't do that with Monster Apocalypse unless you do some really hack jobs. So you could hack Monster Apocalypse with the other things. Like, we did play a three-player game once, but it really was kind of hacking and fudging the rules a little bit. Whereas Monster Apocalypse just expands like that much nicer.
You mean World of Warcraft expands?
Yes, World of Warcraft expands much better.
Okay.
That was me this time.
All right.
I screwed up. Yeah, so that's what I say. World of Warcraft is more expandable. Ryan?
I give the Monster Apocalypse again, but only by just a 1-point margin, 4-3.
Okay.
And just for the fact that, yes, it is very difficult to expand Monster Apocalypse, but you can do it. And I think just because it's a great game anyway, it gives you another point.
So really, no logic behind
No, it's all bias. It's all bias.
It's all pure bias points.
Yeah,
okay, well,
so we got to really take away Ryan's points.
Otherwise, for me, it'd be dead even.
So we got to really take Ryan's points away from this.
Well, that's a real...
Because of bias.
It's not going to help World of Warcraft anyway.
Yeah, really.
So we're down to, now, let's see, after game expansion, 94-71 for Monster Apocalypse. It's still climbing up there, still tearing down World of Warcraft. Let's move on to game mechanics in terms of novelty, how original, how unique the ideas are. I'm starting first. I went 6-3 with Monsterpocalypse. Obviously, World of Warcraft's big thing is the personal clock system. There's certain ticks, and guys only act in certain ticks, and every attack does, you know, takes a certain amount of time. So it gets rid of the whole you go, I go kind of thing. It gets a little bit more of a mix-up going in terms of when your figures can activate, which is definitely interesting and unique. Of course, Monsterpocalypse has the dice pools where basically you got to move dice back and forth to do movements and attacks. So that's definitely different.
So basically you decide which one you think is better.
Which one you think is better. Yeah. But the biggest thing, buildings. Throwing people through buildings is freaking awesome. That's something that's original and unique. Yeah. And the fact that the terrain is really a weapon in itself. I love that. It's awesome. Monsterpocalypse takes it 6-3 because of that thing.
I made it a little bit closer this time. 5-4, still in favor of Monsterpocalypse. Similar reasons, the buildings are definitely a big hit for me and the game mechanics, but I gave a little bit more value to the time clock.
Okay, fair enough.
In World of Warcraft, I really just thought that was something I've never seen before, and it really gave a good impression upon me, which gave it a couple, one extra point.
Ryan, now that Kyle stole your turn, you can go.
Oh, that's okay. No, I mean, I had the same thing Kyle has. Okay. Monsterpocalypse, five to four.
Basically
the same feelings you guys had, same comments. So.
Oh, Ryan didn't take his turn. I waited a couple seconds and
waited like 3 seconds and stole it. Screw you.
Okay. I wasn't sure it was.
Yeah, see, bro. Okay, well, I gotta take control.
With that, Monsterpocalypse is now 110-82. It just keeps climbing higher and higher.
Going into the train now?
train tech.
Last is because I tell I've written down here and I had the totals added up that way. Yes, I screwed up writing these sheets out. So, fun factor. How much fun is this game to play? And we'll let Ryan go first since you guys turned stolen last time.
Yay! Oh, definitely Monsterpocalypse. 7-2 for World of Warcraft. And the only reason why I gave World of Warcraft a 2 is because I beat Jason's pants just a few days ago on World of Warcraft. So that's why it was fun for me. But anything else, Monsterpocalypse is definitely the better fun game. I mean, you just can't beat, like it's been reiterated before, but you can't beat slamming monsters into buildings. You just can't.
Kyle?
I had Monsterpocalypse 2-1, which was 6-3 in actual numbers. 2-1. It's 2-1 ratio.
Yeah, you're right. 2-1 ratio.
I kind of felt that I'll play Monsterpocalypse twice as much as I would World of Warcraft, and therefore gave it a 6-3 rating based on game, you know, just everything as a whole. The monster theme is definitely extremely fun.
I'm going to say 7-2 Monsterpocalypse, kind of the same reason Ryan was saying, but it's, you know, it's a more unique game. It's something different than your typical fantasy sci-fi game. It's a parody, so it's a lot of fun. And it's always awesome to sing the Power Rangers theme when your guard robot just throws somebody into the building.
Yes.
Until you get the actual Power Rangers robot.
Which, that'd be awesome if they ever come out with this, but we got Voltron instead. I can see that board meeting. Someone is in there. I bet someone in Privateer Press is like, how much will it cost to get the Power Rangers? Oh, that's too much expensive. Well, what cheap version can we get instead? Voltron! You can just see that happening, too.
Oh, boy.
Let's see Mr. Burns line. We can't get Steven Spielberg, so can we get his non-union Mexican equivalent? Senior Spielberg or something like that.
Oh, boy. We better get to terrain before we...
Terrain tactics. The reason this is at the end was when I was filling out the sheet for a scorecard, I left it off and had to add it at the end. And then instead of trying to do something differently, I basically added up directly linearly. I mean, this got added up last. But before I get to this, Monsterpocalypse has 130-89. So with a total of... let's see, 21 points to hand out. I believe it's thoroughly in the hands of Monsterpocalypse at this point.
Unless someone broke the rules and said 50 points to...
50 points? What the heck? Kyle, go first.
For terrain, I went on Monsterpocalypse 6-1.
Sounds about right. Buildings again?
Buildings. Yeah, absolutely. The buildings really took everything. What else needs to be said?
Yes. For me... what did I write down here? 5-2, so it's a little bit more generous towards World of Warcraft. As World of Warcraft does have a little bit of terrain tactics, you got the hills give you better attacks, got the woods that give you better defense, But once again, throwing people in the buildings is freaking awesome, and the fact that it's part of the whole game and it actually really works well with everything is why it is so much, so much better.
Yeah, my grade's the same as Jason's, 5-2 for Monster Apocalypse, and the reason being that World of Warcraft does have a little bit, but you just can't beat the Toxic Waste, and you can't beat the fire.
Yeah, that too.
And on there, so.
They look cool.
Yes, they look darn cool, come on.
So final score, Monster Apocalypse 146 to a score of 94 for World of Warcraft miniatures. Is anyone honestly expecting anything different?
Power Rangers versus Ruby Gem Sparkle. Ruby Gem Sparkle, you lose! Woo!
Okay.
You probably wanted to wait a year to say that,
yes,
didn't you?
Yes, I did.
So that means Monster Apocalypse got 1.55 as many times as many points as World of Warcraft. This was, I mean, when we sat down to plan this show out, and I came with the idea, Ryan was like, this is definitely going to be a slaughter.
Yeah, pretty much.
We kind of knew it from the beginning. It's really, Monster Apocalypse is a better game.
Yeah.
And nothing against you World of Warcraft players. I'm sure the game is...
Yeah, it's not a bad game.
I'm sure the game's wonderful, but it's just this game... Compared to this game is better, obviously.
So if you have to waste some money in a collectible miniatures game, buy Monster Apocalypse for whatever Christmas, Hanukkah present, whatever you got coming up.
And if you're a World of Warcraft sure, player and you want to waste money on this game, go ahead.
Create your own holiday.
Create your own holiday.
I mean, why not? I deserve presents today. I would create.
Kyla's awesome day.
Exactly.
Celebrating December 26th. So there you got 2 days of presents. That's smart thinking. So anyway, we're getting close to the end of the show here. I've got one email I want to go over. Actually, technically it works out to be a series of three emails over the course.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
I've been talking back and forth with one of the fans of the show.
Oh, really?
His name is Paul.
We actually have a fan of the show?
We have several fans of the show.
Several?
Several. At least several.
What are these people thinking?
Yeah, no kidding. I have no clue.
I feel bad for them.
Yes. He specifically mentioned the one where we threw the cases off the balcony. He liked that kind of stuff.
Okay,
because nice. No one else has done that. That is truly something only we have done with Tabletop Battlefield. None of the other podcasts do anything like that.
But there's a lot of things in this podcast that nobody else does
that way.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. I think next year we'll have to do even more violent. I was thinking about pushing stuff out of moving
cars. Maybe put in some. Maybe we can get some fireworks.
Fourth of July.
I got
weekend.
Some friends who are a bit of gun collectors, so like to go and try the various firearms. How well could that GWK stand up against a shotgun? Find out next year. No, not really.
Oh no, we should.
Oh my lord.
That awesome.
Sounds like a great
if
idea.
If we could do that without getting in trouble, I would probably do that, but that's big up in the air.
Yeah. Family show. This is a family show. At least
we gotta at least show we're doing legal things.
Yeah, at least legal things.
Anyway, okay, the email.
Want to drive it over your truck next year?
My truck's still living next year? Yeah, we can try
that. Okay, the email.
Or if you get a new truck. Yeah.
The email was from a listener, Paul from the UK. He was basically writing in response to the show we did, it'd be two episodes ago now, which was State of the Game Industry, where we kind of talked about the business models, how things have changed over the past year, what Games Workshop, what Privateer Press has been up to, those kind of things. Mm-hmm. And a lot of our opinions, because of myself and Jerry in the show, all come from over here in the United States. So he was kind of writing to give us some information on what's going on over the UK. It's actually a little bit differently. It's actually quite a long email. I'll summarize it. But I'll post the whole thing in the show notes. You want to see this whole thing here. It's really good stuff here. But the big things are, over in the UK, Games Workshop has some interesting competition. Over here... We basically have Games Workshop versus Privateer Press. Over there, you got third-party companies which actually make figures designed to be compatible with Warhammer Fantasy and Warhammer 40K.
No kidding.
So we don't have that over here. I mean, you could order from some people, but there's no companies over here that really market themselves as, buy these
Game
figures.
Games Workshops has a whole monopoly over that.
That's part of it. Also, because these actual companies that do this are actual former GW employees who got quit or got fired. So they're basically doing it out of spite. Because obviously GW's base, the main basically intelligence operation of GW is in the UK.
Okay.
So that's why they probably have it over there also. Which, ironically then, these companies make figures a lot cheaper. Of course, there's also the other... You can actually buy a Warhammer Fantasy army a lot cheaper, so that's why GW is kind of in a tough spot. They can either keep raising prices and forcing more people over there to those things, to their third-party competitors.
Maybe I can start up with some Warhammer then. because I, you know, we were trying to get me into this, yeah. But it's so expensive.
What does he list the prices at? It's like, he listed the exact prices in here.
Well, it'll be posted.
They're really cheap.
Yeah, don't worry.
Oh, yeah. Entire Warhammer Fantasy Battle Elf Army for around $100.
What?
Nice.
Which is like, you're looking at $300+ for a GW Brandon Army, something like that. So, yeah, there's definitely some nice discounts on these things.
I haven't even played that, and I know that's cheap. I mean, geez, old Pete.
Actually, I'm pretty sure he's converted this all to U.S. dollars for us, because he mentions going between the two a few places.
So it's actually is cheaper and even cheaper in Europe. Because
it's cheaper because they're their own companies there.
No, yeah, and that on top of the currency exchange rate. Because of it, it's actually cheaper.
But obviously, in the U.K., it is. There is no currency exchange rate. There is no shipping over
cross-country.
No, I know.
Well, I mean, he obviously did the currency exchange rate here.
Oh, yeah, you're right, yeah.
So I'm saying it's actually cheaper over there.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It is, it's cheaper over there. But the other thing then we do with Privateer Press, they obviously make War Machine and Monster Apocalypse, and they sell the stuff over in the UK, but because of a combination of tariffs and some other things, they're really, really expensive compared
to EDW.
Not
well received.
Yeah, so over here, they're actually a viable competitor Games Workshop, and they have a nice fan base. They make an awesome game, as we just talked about here. Mm-hmm. But over there, there's some people who play it, but it's such so expensive because of lots of different multiple country kind of crap. It's not a really competitive Games Workshop, so it's a little different landscape in that thing. And he talks a little bit about Arcane Legions a little bit. They have it over there, same kind of things and such. So I'll go ahead and post this all up on the show notes. And then Jerry wrote back a little bit, kind of responding to some of the things, how he mentions, good points and such things. The biggest discrepancy is he thinks historical gaming, Paul, over in the UK, thinks historical gaming is going to come back, and Jerry's like, no, not really. So maybe it's just different markets.
I think it's more of a cycle type of thing.
That's
like
what Jerry's
anything
saying.
Else.
Same. Sometimes it'll be exciting, sometimes it'll not. I play some historical games. They're kind of the one.
It really
depends
on the game.
Yeah, I played one American Revolution game. It's an American Revolution miniatures game. The problem is I was always stuck in 40K mode, so I was still playing against the Tau Empire. Because, in Revolutionary War tactics, you line up with each other and start firing back and forth. That's what you do. So I was sort of freaking out. As soon as we got close, they're going to charge us. We're going to be screwed. I kept saying that. I kept thinking I was playing the Tau Empire. It didn't go very well. But yeah, I'll probably play some more later. Because on the last final note then, for all the people here in Michigan, coming up on December 5th, which actually, that'll be that'll be the week after this weekend. So the show will be out by December 5th. The Metro Detroit Gamers is hosting their WinterCon event, which I'm pretty sure is on the campus of Open University in Rochester Hills, Michigan, I think. That's where it's been the past couple of months. So I will be there December 5th playing some games, trying out some new stuff.
What day is that?
That's a Saturday. So Saturday, December 5th for all the guys in Michigan, anyone in Michigan is listening to the show.
Tough.
I don't know. I'm married now. That might be difficult.
It's an all-day event, so you basically get up there at 8 in the morning and stay till midnight and play games all day long. They got prizes, other stuff like that, so it'll be fun to try.
You're not going
to
broadcast anything, right?
I know. I'm not going to record anything.
You're just going to
have a day. With that, we're just about done with the show. Actually, we are done with the show. We only got one episode left, which, of course, will be kind of our Christmas special. So don't expect anything useful or possibly even intelligent out of that episode.
Just expect a lot of entertainment.
Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun.
Except for maybe last year, which was me not doing anything.
Last year was just terrible. Last year will not happen again.
Actually be
we're not going to even do anything involving outtakes. So maybe a little bit of that, but most of the show will be
last
other
year
stuff.
Was you guys trying to make fun of me and me not reacting to it.
Last year was a disaster, so that's why we're never going to do that again. All right.
We're trying to save you people from our horrific broadcasting.
So, all right, let's just sign off and let's get the show done.
Once again, I am Kyle.
I'm Ryan.
And I'm Jason. We'll see you again in about 2 weeks on the next episode of the Tabletop Battlefield.
The Tabletop Battlefield is copyright 2007-2009 by Jason Rutherford and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial License.
The intro music Down With Everything is by The Transfer and is acquired from www.patefighter.com and is used under a Creative Commons License.